Remains for me to invite up the final speaker of the session, Professor Peter Wilson from University College Hospital in London, who's going to talk about infection prevention so that one doesn't have to scrabble about at the back of the cupboard to try to find some antibiotic that might be effective in the infections that arise. Stop them in the first place. Peter?
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me. Well, we've seen some very erudite and learned discussions over the last hour and a half. Infection prevention is perhaps a little bit more on the practical side, and we desperately need more research in this area. Transmission of these organisms works through a very complex network of different vectors. They're found in human gut flora, in sewage. They're present in the environment, particularly in the bathroom, toilet areas. They're present in food, particularly food that we import from other countries. Crops and food animals, and indeed in our own domestic pets. So these organisms are in our own homes as well. And that makes it very difficult to interrupt the different routes of transmission. There is a lot of pressure, as we've seen, from antibiotic use, the very heavy use of broad-spectrum antibiotics. We, for example, because of C. diff worries, have cut down on the use of third-generation cephalosporins and quinolones, which were in themselves a pressure on these organisms. We've increased the use of piperacillin-tazobactam and co-amoxiclav enormously, but those too provide a pressure on the emergence of these organisms. We're seeing a lot of cephalosporin and quinolone use in veterinary practice, and that has driven these organisms to emerge in the gut flora of animals, food animals, and of course, therefore, back to us. CTXM E. coli is not just resistant to beta-lactams, it's resistant to quinolones, and the use of quinolones can drive these organisms to become more common. We are seeing ESBLs, particularly in urinary specimens, in the elderly, in the long-stay patients who are exposed to a lot of different antibiotics. And therefore, there is a big reservoir of these in the residential nursing homes. Some clones of E. coli are preferentially very good at spreading and will take CTXM15 with them, and that's become now global. We've already seen these kind of maps. This is E. coli resistance to third-generation cephalosporins in 2003. In most of Europe, less than 1%. Some of it, including England, less than 5%, but relatively few areas of high prevalence. And then just a few years later, everywhere between 5 and 10%, some hospitals in southern Europe, up to 25% resistance. We know now in 2012 it's even worse. So I've mentioned that there is probably a lot of gut carriage in the elderly population in residential nursing homes. We need more studies in these areas. We need more studies in patients that are coming out in and out of hospital repeatedly. The organisms can be spread in our own homes. Hand hygiene after using the toilet is a real problem, and certainly when we're testing around the toilet areas in hospitals, we find these organisms on all the toilet furniture, the handles and the door handles especially, so that even if you wash your hands after using the toilet, you then touch the door handle, you'll recontaminate your hands that way. In hospitals, it's particularly Klebsiella, Enterobacter and Serratia, and all of these are spread on the hands. They will survive probably for around 6 hours. But the trouble is not so much people forgetting to wash their hands, it's washing their hands and then touching surfaces that are already contaminated, and picking up the organism again, and then not washing their hands before they're touching the patient. You'll find a very good analysis of the evidence in the Joint Working Group report, which I think is available on the net, which our two chairpersons largely wrote. So what are the basic principles that we need to look at? Urinary catheterization, we need to minimize the numbers of urinary catheters we're putting in. We need to look at ways in which we can avoid using urinary catheters. Similarly, intubation for ventilation, it's difficult because as we get better at treating sicker and sicker patients, we're tending to increase the number of patients who are for a period on a ventilatory support. We can do a lot with cleaning. If you enhance the cleaning, if you double the number of cleaners, or you use more effective cleaning education methods, you can reduce the numbers of these organisms in the environment, reduce the numbers that are picked up on the hands of doctors and nurses, and therefore, by implication, reduce the numbers that cause infections in the patients. Those patients who come in who have a high risk of these organisms or who are known carriers, preemptive isolation before you've confirmed that they are still carriers is very helpful. So those hospitals where we have enough side rooms, this is an option. There are shortly on the horizon new temporary side rooms that may be coming in, which will help those hospitals that don't have these facilities. When a patient is transferred from one hospital to another, it's very important that information about the carriage of these organisms is passed on. So often we get a patient admitted with no history of ESBL, and indeed they are known carriers, and that only comes to light 2 or 3 days after they've been admitted, by which time the organism has already spread in the ward. And when you do get an outbreak, do control it properly. Do conduct root cause analyses. These mini inquiries seem to have been one of the most effective measures in MRSA control, and they should now be rigorously applied to ESBL control. So getting ownership of the clinicians on the ground, getting ownership from the nurses on the ground, not just the infection control staff and microbiologists. If we do it by ourselves, we will get nowhere. We have got to involve the clinicians in finding out what went wrong, where did it get transmitted. There's a high risk of transmission in patients who have got diarrhea. If you have a patient on a commode in a bay, you can pick up 300 to 400 fold increases of numbers of organisms in the air while they're having the diarrhea. So you just imagine you're standing outside the curtain while your patient is having diarrhea on the commode. Imagine what you're breathing in. Patients who are incontinent of urine, we have tracked in our own environment these organisms between the bed and the toilet as they've been walking along in the ward and they've shed these organisms. They can transmit it very easily through close contact. Some strains are very highly transmissible and very prone to causing outbreaks, particularly Klebsiella. Some of their patients are particularly vulnerable to acquiring it. As we are better treating more and more sick patients, keeping them alive, there's a bigger patient population ready for infection. When you get the first case of one of these organisms in a unit where it's not been seen before, there's a very high risk of transmission because people will not be familiar with the control measures. And when you get rising numbers of cases of transmission despite precautions, that's the time you really need to be on the ball. Drastic measures, including closure of the ward is essential. Do not try and keep going because of bed pressures. You'll only make matters worse. If there is a serious incident and you have had a number of cases of transmission in the ward, get the senior in management involved quickly. You will be needing to close wards. That involves a lot of money. That involves their approval. Screen patients. Screen patients certainly don't start admitting new patients to the area either. Get an outbreak group meeting together. This obviously must include the infection control lead, but managerial, estates, nursing and clinical members. Don't allow non-attendance. Be quite draconian in your appeals to the staff to come to these meetings. Sometimes it can be very difficult to get everybody around the table, but it's got to be done and done quickly. When you're managing an outbreak, make sure that the case definition is very clear. You do not want to be distracted by other issues that do not fit a case definition. So fix on a case definition at the start and stick to it. And make sure that you know exactly what your criteria are going to be for closure of the unit to admissions. Get the patients into single rooms as quickly as you can, especially if they've got diarrhea. And maybe you don't have enough single rooms, then you'll have to use a cohort, but cohorts are never as effective. Some of the staff are always shared between areas of the ward when you're using a cohort. The case mix is important, and the vulnerability of your patients, the numbers of staff members you have, and whether these organisms are resistant to a wide variety of antibiotics. Fecal colonization is common, so you do need to enhance your environmental cleaning, particularly of the sanitary areas. The more you clean it, the less you'll have in the environment, the less people will pick up on their hands. Establish whether you've really got an outbreak or whether there's a coincidence. The antibiogram will tell you a bit, but sending to the reference lab is very important to get definitive answers. And get patient-specific equipment. For example, don't share blood pressure cuffs or stethoscopes. In a general preventative measure, antibiotic stewardship is, of course, very important. We need to improve the training of our medical staff in antibiotics. I think what we train the medical students has been gradually whittled away year after year. We seem to spend much less time now than we used to. This has got to be reversed. But we've also got to recognise that registrars and especially consultants are often very ignorant about their antibiotic usage, and they can be very difficult to reach. I strongly support the new apps that are coming in looking at antibiotic stewardship, and I suggest if you haven't got one, you get one in your hospital, and that will at least address one generation of doctors. It may not impact very heavily on the elderly consultants, sadly. But this can improve things. Feedback the use of antibiotics. So the pharmacy should be able to give an idea of how much antibiotic is used on each ward. Feed that back to the ward. Let them know when they're using far too much meropenem or far too much tazosin. It is important to limit third-generation cephalosporins, quinolones, and aminoglycosides because these are all drivers, but it is not the whole answer. National prescribing data in the UK has shown that this policy, as you'd expect, has reduced usage of these antibiotics, but it's had a knock-on effect on a huge increase in coamoxiclav and piptazobactam usage. And that's been coincidence with a big increase in ESBL emergence, tenfold in this time, and a big increase, 300-400%, in the carbapenem usage. And, of course, carbapenemase producing organisms being isolated as well. So it has led to the suggestion, well, perhaps a diversity of antibiotics is important, and some hospitals which have maintained all of these antibiotics in usage have been reporting a lower level of emergence of resistant organisms. Do not treat colonization. You will not get rid of it, even if you do treat it. So only treat infections. Should you be screening? Well, yes. Certainly in areas of high prevalence, and we can see that's already happened in Italy, it is important to start screening patients so that you can preemptively isolate them and stop transmission. You should be doing weekly screens if you are starting to screen. We've seen a lot of success with MRSA screening in control. Maybe this is a way we should be going with ESBLs as well. But just as with MRSA, it's a mistake to screen staff. You should be encouraging hand hygiene with the staff, but don't get into witch hunts. Cleaning is neglected. Cleaning is very important. And it's somewhere where there's really very little research or inadequate research being done. The high contact surface areas, such as the bed rails, particularly the commodes, the toilets, the door handles and the toilets and the taps, are all areas where these organisms can survive. If you clean those twice or three times the frequency that you do normally, you will cut down the bacterial load two or threefold. When you have had an outbreak, make sure you get a terminal clean. This is a time when you might want to consider something like hydrogen peroxide vaporization to the ward. I know we sort of fight shy of that because of the disruption it causes, but it is very effective when you consider that the average domestic cleaner terminally cleaning a room will miss 30% of the surfaces in that room. You can see why HPV might be useful. Training of staff on how these organisms are transmitted is important. Give information to the patients and visitors. Prepare information leaflets. Look at the mortality rates and produce your root cause analyses. These are all essential. When you get a carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae outbreak, use single rooms to their best advantage. These organisms should take precedence over many others. Do a look back. See, have you had any in the last 6 months? Screen contacts so you can assess the total level of the problem. Don't be afraid to close the unit. You should not need to do routine surveillance in the UK at the moment. That's not recommended. But clearly, in places like Italy, I think the time has come. And when you've had these organisms, do make sure you've got an effective terminal cleaning method. Selective decontamination has been around now for many years and has remained controversial for that whole time. This is the practice of giving non-absorbable antibiotics to decontaminate the oropharynx and stomach, particularly in critical care. And in some versions is combined with intravenous third-generation cephalosporins for 3 to 4 days. Now, enormous numbers of randomized controlled trials have been done. The balance is now saying that it does reduce gram-negative pneumonia. It does reduce mortality in a major Dutch study recently, but there is still enormous skepticism about its use, and that's mainly because of the IV component, and people are very afraid of using blanket cephalosporins in this environment. But actually, when you think about it, it's only 20% of the ITU population that's not already having broad-spectrum antibiotics. And so far, the evidence that they cause an increase in resistance really isn't there. So this is something that is undergoing a lot of scrutiny at the moment, And following on from the recent Sudoku study, which we did across the country, there may be a large randomized trial on its way, very large trial. So, will ESBL E. coli become common? I think the answer is yes. The question is only really when and how quickly and how scared do we need to be. We haven't got an accurate estimate of gut carriage in the general population. That's needed. We haven't really got much in the way of what's the prevalence in imported food. We know from some work that Rob Warren has done that imported poultry in particular has high proportions of these organisms in the gut. There's also a lot of human-animal transmission. So even if we manage to control it in the hospital, we're not going to control transmission in the home between humans and animals. All these questions will be or are being considered by a joint working party under the chairmanship of Peter Hawkey, and I'm secretary. And this will be working through this coming year to try and produce some evidence-based recommendations by the end of next year. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks indeed, Peter. Questions from the floor, please.
Thank you very much, Peter. Armando González, Kent. We know that the Cinderella of healthcare ureter infections are the urinary catheter associated infections, and from there we get E. coli bacteremias. Since we've done quite well on the MRSA bacteremias targets, do you think it will be advisable to have targets also for E. coli bacteremias associated with catheters?
Well, I think it'll probably happen. I think you've got to be really careful with targets. They can be extremely useful in focusing the minds of the chief execs and, importantly, where they put their resources into controlling these infections. And if they put their minds to it, that brings along the clinicians with them. I think you can overdo it, and possibly that's counterproductive. But, I think probably we should be getting ESBL targets fairly soon. If we start seeing in the UK how things have been happening in Italy. But I don't know what's the situation in Italy, if you're already using some kind of central control or not.
I think the answer Professor Vasolini said before was that in Italy matters were arranged on a regional basis rather than nationally. The question over there.
Hello, Alaric Colville from Exeter Microbiologist. Peter, thanks very much for that. I'm very interested in what your thoughts might be in view of the importance of frequently touched surfaces on the materials we use. There's a lot of interest in things like silver and copper at the moment, and no doubt other candidates.
I certainly think this is something that we need to be investigating very carefully. Again, we need good controlled trials with different surfaces. You'll all have seen a lot of work produced by the copper development people, which does seem to indicate reductions in transmission of infection. As I understand it, those are largely VRE transmission, but we wait to see with interest more details of those results. Certainly, if you improve cleaning, which is easy to do, or you change surfaces, which is less easy to do, you can have a significant impact on the numbers of these organisms in the environment. And when you do that, we did a big randomized study with reducing by cleaning the numbers of organisms by half. It reduced the numbers of organisms on the doctor's and nurse's hands by half. So if you have a copper or a photolytic dye or a hydrophobic surface incorporated, the chances are that you will be reducing the numbers of organisms on the hands of the staff by a similar amount. most of the organisms seem to be picked up from the surfaces rather than from the patients, as long as a reasonable amount of hand hygiene goes on. So I think the surfaces are underestimated and are actually, their importance is underestimated, and actually we should be concentrating on them. We have also found that if you look at the bed rails of the two major manufacturers of beds, one has 10 times the bacterial flora of another with similar patients, and it's because the surface is rough and sticks organisms, or the surface is smooth and doesn't stick organisms. So there's a lot more we need to do looking at surfaces.